Welcome to episode 203 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast, as recorded March 29th, 30th, and 31st, 2013. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, a California assemblyman hopes that the third time will be the charm for a three-foot passing bill. Plus, a legislator up in Washington says, let's tax cyclists because they emit CO2. Plus, Volvo's introducing a cyclist alert system for new cars, some bike share news, some product recall news, and of course, professional racing news. After the news, a voicemail from a listener, an app for reading all your favorite cycling magazines, and how to watch a European race on your computer here in the United States. Plus, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you back here with me as we get started to talk a little bit more about bikes and cycling and technology and everything around this sport that we all love so much. I don't know about you, spring has definitely sprung here in the Rocky Mountains, the Wasatch back of Utah, and I've been getting a lot of great riding in. So, at the end of the show, I'll talk to you about where you can find me on Twitter and Facebook and all of that, but go ahead and check it out because I've been doing a lot of social media stuff around all the cycling that I've been doing lately here. So go ahead and check it out. And it's a great time to get back into more frequent episodes of the Fredcast. So watch your feed. We got a lot more coming at you here over the next weeks and months. We do have a lot to cover on this week's episode of the Fredcast, but before we do, we must thank our wonderful sponsor, Jensen USA, at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. So there's a couple of things I want you to look at when it comes to Jensen this week. Number one, don't forget, when you go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast, I have personally picked out a number of products that I found on jensenusa.com that I thought you would find interesting. Some of them just because they're products that I use all the time, and they're products that I strongly recommend for you, and some of them just because they're killer deals. Everything from components to apparel and footwear to full complete bikes. Some great prices on some great products, so go ahead and check it out. The next thing, and this is coming up this coming Tuesday, so here's a little bit of a preview for you. This is coming up on Tuesday, April the 2nd, and that is Jensen USA is starting a month-long huge bicycle sale, so complete bike sale. Everything from road bikes to mountain bikes to 29ers and cyclocross bikes and everything in between. So you're going to want to go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast later on this week and check out the amazing bike sale that Jensen USA is going to be having. I've told you for a long time that Jensen USA is known for having a great selection, having some just amazing, fantastic prices, and some of the best customer service in the industry. I had breakfast recently with a representative from Jensen USA, and we were talking specifically about customer service and how it really pervades the culture at Jensen USA. And once you've given them a try, you're likely not to go back to any other online bike or bike component retailer. So go ahead and check them out. It's jensenusa.com/thefredcast, or click through that link on the main page at thefredcast.com. But please do one of those, because we want them to know how you got to Jensen USA. So if you're clicking through on the internet, jensenusa.com/thefredcast, or click the banner on the website, or if you're calling, just let them know before you place your order. Hey, I wanted you to know, I heard about you on the Fredcast. I'd really appreciate it. As always, we thank Jensen USA for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Well, let's get started with the news, starting first on the west coast of the United States in California, where over the last couple of years, the California State Legislature has passed not one, but two three-foot safe cyclist passing bills. Each of those bills was sent to Governor Jerry Brown's desk, and each of those bills was vetoed by California Governor Jerry Brown. Once again, a California State Assemblyman, this time Stephen Bradford of Gardena, California, has introduced another safe passing bill for the state of California. And this time, according to our good friend Richard Mazner over at Cyclicious, Mr. Bradford has introduced specific language in the bill that he hopes will allow Governor Brown to finally, a third time, finally sign a 3-foot safe passing bill, specifically detailing how and when a car can safely pass a bicyclist, including how a car should deal with having to cross a double yellow line in order to pass a bicyclist. As a matter of fact, because Governor Brown has now vetoed this bill twice, or similar bills twice before, according to Fritz or Richard over at Cyclicious, cyclists in California now call any hit from behind accident with a car a quote-unquote Jerry Brown in honor of the governor's previous two vetoes. The new bill is AB or Assembly Bill 1371. And I have included a link in the show notes where you can follow the bill's progress. And for those of you who are in California, I would strongly recommend that you write to your California State Assemblymen or Assemblywomen and California State Senators, as well as to the governor's office, imploring them this time, let's pass it through the legislature, let's get it signed, and let's make this the law in California as it is in 22 other of the United States. Now, before I get into this next story, I want to clear something up right here and now. No joke. I realize that you are most likely downloading this on the 1st of April, 2013. I want to be clear. There are no April Fool's jokes in this episode of the Fredcast. I'm not that creative, folks. And so I'm not really good at coming up with good April Fool's jokes. So while this next story may sound like an April Fool's joke and another one coming up later in the show, I assure you there are no April Fool's jokes in this show. So having said that, you may, and if you have, then you know it wasn't an April Fool's joke, but you may have heard about Representative Ed Orcutt, Republican from the state of Washington, who, by the way, is a ranking member on the state of Washington's Transportation Committee in the House of Representatives in the state of Washington here in the United States. Now, you may have heard Representative Orcutt took his shoe off and inserted his foot firmly in his mouth earlier in March when, in response to an email that he received from a constituent who happens to be a bike shop owner, imploring him to ensure that there were no new taxes on bicycles. In that email reply is when Representative Orcutt inserted his foot in his mouth. And for those of you who may not be from the United States, putting a foot in one's mouth is an idiom we use here to indicate when someone has said something really, really stupid. So let me back up a second. House Democrats, and again, the House of Representatives, which is the state, one of the two houses of the state legislature in the state of Washington, the Washington state government, the Democrats in the House of Representatives introduced a $25 fee, a tax, on the purchase of new bicycles as part of an overall package of revenue raising plans that would raise about $9 or $10 billion over the next 10 years for the state of Washington. Lots of constituents in the state of Washington wrote to their representatives in the state legislature imploring them not to put an additional tax on bicycles beyond the traditional sales taxes. In response, Representative Orcutt wrote back saying, and I'll read the entire email, highlighting the part where he kind of makes a fool of himself. I'm not a fan of much in the House transportation tax proposal, nor of many tax proposals, but I have to admit, I think there are valid reasons to tax bicycles. Think about this for a moment. Currently, motorists are paying us paying to use their cars on the roads while they're actually driving their cars. At the same time, they're paying for bike lanes because there is no gas tax or any transportation tax generated by the act of riding a bike on the roadways. Attention, Carlton Reed, this reminds me of you. So, if cars pay for the roads they're using, it only makes sense that bicyclists would also be required to pay for the roads they use when they're actually biking on them. Now, here's where he really gets silly. Also, you claim that it's environmentally friendly to ride a bike, but if I'm not mistaken, a cyclist has an increased heart rate and respiration. That means, here it comes, folks, that the act of riding a bike results in greater emissions of carbon dioxide from the rider. Since CO2 is deemed to be a greenhouse gas and a pollutant, bicyclists are actually polluting when they ride. Let me read that again. Since CO2 is deemed to be a greenhouse gas and a pollutant, bicyclists are actually polluting when they ride. And yes, I'm reading this verbatim. I know you own a car and drive, so you're paying gas tax, but not while you're riding your bike. When you're driving your car and generating gas tax, you are also driving on the roads. So, and I'm reading this verbatim, so there clearly is a typo here. So are only really paying for the roads when driving, not while biking. Sorry, but I do think that bicyclists need to start paying for the roads they ride on rather than make motorists pay. All of that, unquote. Well, you can imagine the furor that resulted after Representative Orcutt sent this letter out and after the letter was circulated first in the local media, then the national media, then the international media. Finally, the representative wrote to the Seattle Bike Blog to recant his statement, saying, again, quoting, "First of all, let me apologize for the carbon emissions line of an email which has caused so much concern within the bicycle community. It was over the top, and I admit, is not one which should enter into the conversation regarding bicycles. Although I've always recognized that bicycling emits less carbon than cars, I see I did a poor job of indicating that within my email. My point was that by not driving a car, a cyclist was not necessarily having a zero carbon footprint. And looking back, it was not a point worthy of even mentioning. So again, I apologize, both for bringing it up and for the wording of the email. Second, please understand that I have not proposed, nor do I intend to propose, any tax, and certainly not a carbon tax, on bicyclists. There's little in the Democrat tax proposal that I support. However, the one aspect of the tax plan, the Democrat tax plan, that has merit is their proposed $25 tax on the purchase of any bicycle $500 or more. I'm willing to consider this because I've heard requests from members of the bicycle community that they want more money for bicycle infrastructure. The idea of bicyclists paying for some of the infrastructure they're using is one which merits consideration. Since I've heard concerns about doing this via sales tax due to the impact on bicycle shops, I'm very willing to work with the bicycle community to determine an appropriate way to enable bicyclists to pay for some of the bicycle-only lanes and overpasses. It is my intent to seek out your advocates in Olympia to see if there are other ways to accomplish this. Again, I do apologize for the carbon line in the email and any confusion it has created. I look forward to working on reasonable solutions to the problem cyclists are having with infrastructure." I think that he removed his foot, you know, a few inches from his mouth, but it seems to me as if it's still in there. That's my opinion. I'd love to hear yours, and I'm looking forward to discussing this on the next episode of The Spokesman with Carlton Reed, who, as you know, has been waging the road tax battle in the UK for many years. And our second story in the "This is not an April Fool's Day joke, and I really mean it, folks" department comes to us from the Los Angeles Times. And I swear I read this story over the weekend and I thought this has to be an April Fool's joke, but it turns out that it is not. The issue surrounds green bike lanes that have been painted on the streets in downtown Los Angeles. Now, you've seen these green bike lanes before. In some cases, they are to create protected, quote-unquote protected, bike lanes so that motorists have a clearer understanding of the difference between the street, the portion of the street on which cars are allowed, and the portion of the street on which only bicycles are allowed. In other areas, these green bike lanes are used in sharrows, as if to designate we cyclists are allowed to share the lane or even take up the entire lane if necessary. But the concern here is in downtown Los Angeles, specifically a 1.5 mile long strip of Spring Street in downtown LA, which has been painted brightly green to designate it as a bicycle safe zone. And you'll recall that Los Angeles is on a bike safety kick as a result of Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa having become himself a bicycle advocate. All right, sounds fine so far, right? Here's the problem. The green bike lane is upsetting to those folks in Los Angeles who are scouting film locations. According to film scouts, they use downtown Los Angeles to represent a variety of different cities and a variety of different time periods. And the green bike lane is going to be distracting to viewers, either because green bike lanes didn't exist, say, in the 1930s or 40s, etc., or because the city that they're trying to depict in their movie shoot doesn't itself use green bicycle lanes. According to Ed Duffy, and again, this is from the Los Angeles Times, a business agent for Teamsters Local 399, which represents location managers, in an email to its members said, quote, "As we all know, unlike other major cities, our downtown footprint is very small and limited, and we've used this stretch of road for anywhere to represent anywhere in the world, any big city, for years, and it is vital to us for many projects." Now, apparently, and I don't know if it was the union or just folks in the movie industry in general, they negotiated with City Hall, specifically the representatives and the mayor, for several months and finally got someone in City Hall to agree that they would allow the green paint to fade and they wouldn't repaint it. Now, think about it for a second. Good for the movie business, not necessarily good for the safety of cyclists in downtown Los Angeles. But now, according to the Los Angeles Times, it looks like the city is ready to put a fresh strip of green paint down on Spring Street once again. Now, according to Duffy, again, that Teamsters Local 399 business agent, quote, "We spend so much time fighting to keep filming in the city and to keep the city film friendly. When something like this happens, we can't take it lightly. We're in a crisis mode, and every one of these little things just puts us more into a crisis." Later on in the story, the Los Angeles Times quotes veteran film scout Lori Balton. She's worked on such films as The Dark Knight Rises and Inception and the upcoming Johnny Depp movie, The Lone Ranger. She says, quote, "I was just scouting on Spring Street yesterday, and the thing that I noticed was that hideous green paint had started to fade, and I was grateful for it. That bright green strip doesn't exist in any other city," she said. "And if you're shooting a period piece down there, which we frequently do, it removes you from the story and disturbs the willing suspension of disbelief," unquote. All right, here's where I put in my personal opinion. I've told you time after time after time of all the riding that I've done in the city of Los Angeles, and when I have ridden there, my feeling of relative safety as a cyclist, and feeling, well, quite frankly, unsafe riding in many places in the city of Los Angeles. And while I understand that the movie industry needs to continue and thrive in the city of Los Angeles to allow people to continue to make their livelihood, including a lot of folks that I've known from growing up in LA and still know who are in the movie business, I'm sorry, folks, but I think cyclist safety is important. And I also know that you're pretty darn good at special effects. So use Spring Street, and then use your technology, if necessary, to erase the, what did she call it, hideous green paint, quote unquote, and allow cyclists to continue being safe and allow the movie business to continue thriving and shooting in the city of Los Angeles. Next up, another story which you might think is straight out of science fiction, and this again is not an April Fool's joke. This story is about a new system coming to Salt Lake City, Utah. Now think about it. How many times have you come up to a major intersection, which is frequented by cars and may even be intersected by, well, by bike lanes, or it might be just a well-traveled route for bicycles? You come up to the intersection, the light's red, there's no cars heading in your direction, and the light stays red. Because the loops that are embedded into the pavement at most intersections these days are there to sense the presence of cars, specifically a lot of metal. Most of us do not have bikes, thankfully, that have that much metal or are that heavy. Well, here in Salt Lake City, they are installing, or they've installed, a new system at 9 intersections that are frequented by a lot of bicycles to help bicyclists get through those intersections and get those lights changed. Now, the system comes from a company based out of Provo, Utah, called Wavetronics. And what they've done is they've put a decal in the street. You pull up to it on your bicycle, and if there is light or no traffic in the opposite direction, what essentially amounts to a radar that's mounted on the light standard senses the presence of the cyclist and cycles the light appropriately to allow the cyclist to get along his or her way with a minimum of delay. Now, in the past, we all know what ends up happening is a cyclist will wait, look both ways, no cars coming, and a lot of times will end up running the red light. Well, this allows the bicyclist to get on their way faster and safer, and hopefully as a system we'll be seeing expanded not only here in the Utah area, but around the country and indeed around the world. It's a great idea. I can't wait to get down to Salt Lake City and give it a try. Well, just about a year ago, you'll remember I brought to you the story of Chris Boucher, the cyclist in San Francisco, who on March 29th entered an intersection at Castro and Market Streets, striking a pedestrian, Suchi Hui, who was 71 years old at the time, causing Mr. Hui to hit the ground, and eventually Mr. Hui died from his injuries. You'll also recall Mr. Boucher is the one who wrote the ode to his, well, the ode to his late helmet, his helmet that was destroyed as a result of the accident. And there were lots of rumors circulating that perhaps Boucher had run the red light, maybe some other red lights, and maybe was trying to beat his time on Strava. Well, after what appears to have been quite an emotional preliminary hearing earlier this month, Chris Boucher was held over for trial by Superior Court Judge Andrew Cheng, and Mr. Boucher will have to answer charges, having been charged with vehicular manslaughter. Witnesses telling the judge at the preliminary hearing that they had previously, or before the accident, they had seen Boucher running red lights, running stop signs, and at the particular intersection at Castro and Market, one of the witnesses said that they witnessed Boucher crouch down to go faster through the intersection before striking Mr. Hui. Now, there is also surveillance video of the collision, and of course, one side says that the surveillance video shows Mr. Boucher running the red light, and the other side, of course, says that the surveillance video shows that the pedestrians left the entered the crosswalk before the light had changed, and that Mr. Boucher had gone through the crosswalk with the right-of-way and with the lights. The case has garnered a lot of attention, not only in Northern California, but around the country, and indeed around the world, surrounding cyclists flaunting traffic laws, and also surrounding Strava itself. So I'll keep you posted as this case does proceed over the next weeks and months. Well, a few moments ago, I mentioned the fact that Salt Lake City's bike share system is just about to open, and that's going to happen here on Monday, April the 8th. We're excited about that and looking forward to having bike share here in Salt Lake City, Utah. But for those of you who are in Pittsburgh, never fear, because your mayor, Luke Ravenstahl, you tell me, has now announced that you too will be getting a bike share system involving, at least initially, 500 bikes and 50 bike stations. It's going to be called Pittsburgh Bike Share. It's going to cost $75 for an annual membership, although you can also pay a monthly fee of $25 per month, $15 for 3 days, or $7 for a 24-hour pass. So look for that coming starting next spring or summer. So spring or summer 2014. Meanwhile, the city of Anaheim, California, perhaps best known for, well, What else? The happiest place on earth, Disneyland, as we've talked about here on the show before, Anaheim started their bike share system several months ago. And it's had a bit of a disappointing start because, according to the statistics by the Bike Nation, which is the vendor providing bike share in the city of Anaheim, although they only have 3 kiosks, in the first 28 days of operation, only 30 people had rented bikes. That's about 1 bike rental per day. Now, eventually, the city is going to have 10 kiosks with up to 100 bicycles. And I'm hoping that as the weather turns a little bit warmer, although I guess that's relative in Southern California, and as the tourist crowds start to come to Anaheim, tourists and the convention crowds, because they get a good convention crowd there in Anaheim as well, I'm hoping that the system will catch on, will have more enthusiasm, and then eventually it will build out to that full 10 kiosks and 100 bikes. Be interesting to see what happens there. And it's interesting to me that they haven't seen a great amount of usage of the bike share system there in Anaheim, specifically considering the fact that they do get so many tourists and they do get so many business people coming through just for short visits. Now, I went on the website for Anaheim Bike Share and I wasn't able to see a list of stations on their website. So I wonder if also some of this has to do with a need for better marketing, better PR. For instance, if I was staying in the convention center area and I was taking my family to Disneyland, would I have the opportunity, and even though it can only be maybe, I don't know, 3/4, maybe a mile, would I have the opportunity to rent a bike at my hotel or in the hotel area and then ride to Disneyland? That's something that would be interesting to me. And is it in that general tourist area of hotels and restaurants? But I can't find out from their website. And I wonder if that might also be what's contributing to the failure in popularity. We'll keep our eye on it and see what happens. I'm hoping that it catches fire there as it has around the country and indeed around the world. Moving on to technology news, automobile maker Volvo announced at the Geneva Motor Show several weeks ago that they will soon be outfitting cars with original equipment intended to detect cyclists in a car's path and allow the car to sound a warning and fully activate the car's brakes if a collision is imminent. Now, what I wasn't aware of is that Volvo had previously, in 2010, introduced a pedestrian warning system using a very similar system that uses a radar behind the car's grille and a camera between the windshield and the rearview mirror. These two, coupled with a computer processor and the right software, detect pedestrians in the car's path and allow the car to help avoid a collision with the pedestrian. And now the hardware and software have been updated to do the same thing for cyclists. Now, unfortunately, if you have a Volvo car with the pedestrian detection system, you will not be able to upgrade that car with the cyclist detection system because of the upgraded code and hardware that will need to go into the system. But this is a system that can be purchased in the future, but only as original equipment. Apparently, at least according to the article that I read, if motorists want to add this to their cars, it's going to add about £1,850 to the price of the car. Seems like a pretty good idea. Now, what's really cool, and we see this all the time in my area, is that Volvo is now also looking into an animal detection system to help motorists avoid deer, moose, dogs, horses, etc. And that hopefully will be announced by Volvo in the very near future. This is a great idea, and I'm hoping that we see this from other automakers in the very near future. Great idea. Kudos to Volvo. Now, also on the technology front, and something that's good for cyclist safety, the Australian firm Nog, a company whose products I personally am a fan of, has just announced a new line of head and tail lights. Now, I have Nog lights on all my bikes, especially when I'm out at night, but particularly Nog's lights, the ones that I've got right now, have been used to allow cyclists to be seen, but not necessarily are they adequate enough to allow cyclists to get an adequate view of the road ahead. And that's exactly what Nog has just introduced, which are powerful headlights and taillights that will allow cyclists to actually see unlit roads. Now, the new Nog Blinder road lights will deliver a 200 lumen front headlight beam and a 70 lumen rear strobe light. Like all of Nog lights, they're USB rechargeable, they're waterproof, and they've got that cool anodized aluminum frame and the silicon strap that allows it to attach and detach from a bike very, very simply and without additional hardware. Nog is saying that the front light will retail for about $85 US and the rear for about $60 US. And I do have a link in the show notes to where you can find more information on Nog. That's K-N-O-G. And while we're talking about products, unfortunately, I have three product recalls to tell you about. I'll go through them quickly, and you can find the rest of the information in the show notes. The first is a cargo bike from Yuba Bicycles. Specifically, these are the Mundo Carbo bikes, and they're being recalled because the feet of passengers could get caught in the rear wheel, and you can imagine that that might cause an injury problem. Now, specific recalled bicycles are the Mundo V4 cargo bikes. These are 26-inch bikes with steel frames, aluminum fenders on the front and rear wheels, and a wood utility deck mounted on the rear cargo rack. They come in orange, black, or blue, and the word Mundo is on the top tube of the bike frame, and Yuba on the down tube. There's more information in the show notes on specific serial numbers, so go ahead and check it out. And of course, I've got a link to the specific CPSC page, the Consumer Product Safety Commission's page, on each of these recalls. And I gotta also say, kudos to the CPSC. They've really simplified those product recall pages, made them a lot easier to read for you to get the information you need. All right, next up, Bell Sports is recalling certain BMX bike helmets due to the risk of head injury. And these bike helmets, these BMX helmets, were sold specifically at Toys R Us retailers here in the United States between July 2012 and January 2013 for about $60. There's about 2,500 of these, and these are Bell full throttle, full coverage bike or BMX helmets with a chin bar. These are all black helmets. And you can find more information about the specific UPC codes and what to do if you have one of these helmets. Bottom line is stop using it and check out the recall that's linked in the show notes. And finally, these are hydraulic disc brakes from Magura USA. And the problem is that in low temperatures, the brakes can fail. And you can imagine what that might do for you. There's about 2,800 units involved here. These are the Magura MT6 and MT8. Hydraulic disc brakes, and these consist of a brake lever and master cylinder that attach to the handlebars, plus, of course, the hose that runs between the master cylinder and the caliper, which attaches to the rear wheel. These were sold by bike retailers and distributors in the United States between January 2011 and March 2013 for between $269 and $379. Don't mess around with these product recalls, folks. If you even suspect that you've got a product that's been recalled, stop using it immediately. Check the link in the show notes and get your product repaired or replaced right away. All right, well, let's move on to professional cycling news. And before we do, today, the final day that I'm recording this show, was the Tour of Flanders, the Ronde van Vlaanderen in Belgium. And I got an email a couple of weeks ago from a listener named Matilda. And Matilda told me that she would be interested because she was going to the Tour of Flanders and she wanted to record some interesting segments from the Tour of Flanders to be played here on the Fredcast. And I jumped at the opportunity because unfortunately I didn't have the opportunity to go to the Tour of Flanders this year. And so Matilda is furiously editing and putting those together right now, and they'll be on the next episode of the Fredcast. But first, I just wanted to read a little bit of a intro from Matilda so that you can get an idea of what you'll be hearing on the next episode. She says, "Hi, my name is Matilda Hedberg Dowdle. And I hope I got that right, Matilda. Please let me know if I didn't. I'm just starting out as a cycling journalist, a sport that's proven to be extremely exciting to report on. Not only are there millions of fans who really breathe the sport, but there's so much that's just waiting to be discovered. With that in mind, I've traveled to Belgium in the Tour of Flanders. 2013 is the 97th edition of the race, and it's a classic one. For the people of Flanders, it's basically holy, and the celebrations start 3 days ahead. It's 4th of July meets Mardi Gras meets Super Bowl. It's that big. Who will be the winner of the 31st of March? That question can be answered with a simple Google search, but what about what goes on around the race? What do female cyclists think of the coverage of their race? What's it like racing in Belgium? Who are the fans and why do they follow the sport? What's it like in the middle of an insane crowd along the track on the big day? Those are just some of the questions I will answer during this 3-day trip." So Matilda, I can't wait to hear your reports. I'm looking forward to them. And for those of you listening, I hope you'll stay tuned to the next episode of the Fredcast when we all get to hear Matilda's take on this year's Ronde van Vlaanderen, the Tour of Flanders. Well, let's just talk real briefly about some of the results from this year's World Tour since we last met here on the Fredcast. And I've got to say, a lot of these results are, well, they're focused on Peter Sagan and Fabian Cancellara. Let's look at Paris-Nice. And by the way, the weather in Europe this spring has been unrelenting. We have seen several races where the racers are dealing with very challenging weather conditions, rain, cold, snow, the need to stop races, have everybody get on the team buses, and then restart the race in better weather conditions. It has been brutal cycling. And if you haven't been watching, you've missed some great races. And by the way, we're going to talk a little bit later about how to watch if you don't have the opportunity to see live coverage in your specific country. I've got a great tip for you, something that I've been doing and something that you can consider yourself. So first of all, March 3rd through the 10th was Paris-Nice. Paris-Nice was won by Richie Porte in 29 hours, 59 minutes, and 47 seconds. Second place went to Andrew Talansky and third to Jean-Christophe Perraud. March 6th through the 12th saw Tirreno-Adriatico won by Vincenzo Nibali in 28 hours, 8 minutes, and 17 seconds, followed by Chris Froome and, hey, what do you know, Alberto Contador. March 17th, the one-day Milan-San Remo, first place going to Peter Sagan, and second place going to Fabian Cancellara, third place to Joaquin Rodriguez. In the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya, March 18th through the 24th, Danny Martin took it in 29 hours, 2 minutes, and 25 seconds, followed by Joaquin Rodriguez and Michele Scarpone. In the E3 Harrobecca on March 22nd, look at this, first place, Fabian Cancellara, and second place, Peter Sagan, third place going to Daniel Oss. March 24th was the Gent-Wevelgem, won by, in first place, Peter Sagan, second place, Borut Bozic, and third place going to Greg Van Avermaet. By the way, Fabian Cancellara, nowhere in the top 10. Cancellara abandoning the race along with a lot of others. And then we turn to, well, the 31st of March, as Matilda said in her email, to the Ronde van Vlaanderen, the Tour of Flanders. Huge crowds, great race. Fabian Cancellara takes it this year. Tom Bonin was hoping for his fourth. He wanted to be the first rider to ever win 4 Tour of Flanders. He crashed out and was actually taken away by an ambulance. So we're looking forward to seeing how Bonin fares and whether or not he'll be back for more of the Spring Classics, although at the moment it doesn't look good. Second place, Peter Sagan. Third, Jürgen Roelants. By the way, a bit of controversy at the podium of the Tour of Flanders. As the podium girls were planting kisses on the cheeks of Fabian Cancellara, Peter Sagan was photographed pinching the cheeks, or the rear end, the butt cheeks of one of the podium girls, and has been roundly criticized for what lots of people are calling sexist and harassment. I know we're going to be talking about this on the next episode of The Spokesman, so stay tuned for that. But meanwhile, consider the fact that Tom Bonin crashed out of today's race. Fabian Cancellara won E3 Harelbeke and wins the Tour of Flanders. It seems that Fabian Cancellara is the early favorite for next week's Paris-Roubaix on Sunday, April 7th. Of course, Peter Sagan is very strong this year and is looking for victory after victory after victory. I think next week's Paris-Roubaix is going to be a very exciting race. Well, let's talk about what races are coming up in the month ahead. April 1st through the 6th is the Vuelta Ciclista al País Vasco, the bicycle tour of the Basque country in Spain. Next Sunday, April 7th, Paris-Roubaix, the Hill of the North. April 14th, it's the Amstel Gold Race. April 17th, the Flèche Wallonne. April 21st, Liège-Bastogne-Liège. And April 23rd through the 28th, the Tour de Romandie. All right, so where are we as of today, March 31st, after the Tour of Flanders? Peter Sagan is sitting in first place atop the world rankings, followed right behind by Fabian Cancellara, then Joaquin Rodriguez, Sylvain Chavanel, Geraint Thomas, Richie Porte, Tom Hjelte-Slachter, Danny Martin, Vincenzo Nibali, and Andrew Talansky. And as for reporting on a former racer, our thoughts and good wishes go out to 67-year-old Eddie Merckx, who was recently fitted with a cardiac pacemaker to deal with an irregular heart rhythm. According to an Italian cardiologist, Giancarlo Lavezzaro, Eddie Merckx had a non-obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is a genetic condition in which the heart muscle thickens, affecting its function. Symptoms include shortness of breath, chest pain, palpitations, lightheadedness, fatigue, and fainting, and it's the leading cause of sudden death in young athletes. And interestingly, Eddie Merckx says that he always thought that he had, quote, an odd heart, unquote, and that his father and his uncles all died young of heart problems. So we want Eddie to live a long and fruitful life, so hopefully this pacemaker will allow him to do so. Closing out the news tonight, another new product that I wanted to tell you about, or at least one that we hope will see the light of day. You see, this is a product that's looking for crowdfunding using the crowdfunding website Kickstarter.com. A few Chicago area entrepreneurs and designers have come up with a device that uses cellular and GPS technology to allow you to know whether or not your bike is being tampered with, and if it gets stolen, helps you direct the police to its location. The new device is called Bike Spike, and the entrepreneurs are looking for funding on Kickstarter. Here's what Bike Spike will do. You'll be able to monitor your bike's location on a map using your smartphone or a computer. There's a collision detection system that can also let people know, friends, close family, if you've been in an accident using an accelerometer. It will allow you to know whether or not your bike has left a certain geofenced area, especially if you've locked it up. That's going to tell you whether or not it has been stolen. You can allow law enforcement temporary access, sort of as you do with a LoJack device on a car, to help locate your stolen bicycle. Plus, depending on the plan, you'll also be able to use the Bike Spike to let friends know where you are on a race course, track your stats, such as distance and speed, and also allow you to share that not only with friends, but also with coaches. Plus, there's going to be an open API or an application programming interface that will allow other programmers to be able to use BikeSpike in ways perhaps that you and I and the designers haven't even thought of since. Now, there will be a monthly subscription fee once BikeSpike becomes a reality of between $6.99 and $12.99. But of course, there are discounts for those who get in on the Kickstarter project right away. It's a great idea. And by the way, while it does use batteries, the designers say that the batteries can last up to a month before they need recharging. And the device is carefully hidden and camouflaged behind a carbon fiber water bottle cage. So they've really thought of everything with this device. You can get more information by going to their Kickstarter page. I think it's a really interesting idea. And if you're interested, you can become a supporter and an early adopter. And if you do, let me know, because I'd love to hear your review of the product if and when it becomes released. Now, I would be remiss if I mentioned this Kickstarter project and didn't mention the Kickstarter project from my friend Carlton Reed. Carlton started a Kickstarter a couple of weeks ago. He kindly allowed me to critique his video before it went online. I told Carlton maybe he should get out of the written journalism game and become a video producer, because his video is phenomenal. But I also know what a great writer he is, and that's why I'm a supporter of his Kickstarter project for his new book, Roads Were Not Built for Cars. He has already gone beyond the 100% funding goal for the book, and so he's adding more rewards for those who continue to provide funding for his book. And he was chosen by the Kickstarter staff as one of their picks of the week last week. So go ahead and check it out. I've also got a link in the show notes to Carlton's Kickstarter for his Roads Were Not Built for Cars book. Become a supporter and get a hold of the book early, just as I will. Go ahead and check it out. And with that, that will close out the news segment for this week's episode of the Fredcast. Well, earlier this evening, as I was preparing to start recording the show, a voicemail came into my email box from listener Greg in Southern California, and it made me smile. And then it made my daughter smile. And then it made my wife smile. And I think it will make you smile as well, because listener Greg, as you will find out, took part in an event that my daughter Emily and I took part in several years ago when Emily was 10 years old. She's now almost 17. And, well, let me just share with you listener Greg's voicemail. Greg?
David, this is Greg from Fontana, California. I was calling just to say thank you for the information on the ride across California. My daughter and I just got back from 270 glorious miles across the desert, up mountains, down mountains, through hills, up Julian, apple pie, bear claws, and tons of fun. She did things that she said were impossible, and she did them just one pedal at a time. She is powerfully made, and we had experiences that will last us a lifetime. Thank you so much for sharing the information. It was an hour and a half down to the meetings every Thursday for myself, and worth every minute of it. If anyone lives in the Southern California area, you'd be crazy not to take your child on the ride across California. Spend the time, take the time. It's a marvelous thing. Gary Rossi was amazing and tons of fun. Again, thank you for sharing with me this information, and it was a real blessing. Thank you.
Well, if you're a new listener to the Fredcast, you may not be aware that back, I believe in 2007, my daughter Emily and I had the pleasure of doing the ride across California. After I heard about it, I remember I was at Interbike the year before, and somebody had told me about the ride across California, and I contacted Gary Rossi, who was mentioned by Greg in his voicemail. And I interviewed Gary on the show on Fredcast episode number 41, and he was gracious enough to invite me and my daughter Emily to join him. And on Fredcast 68, I interviewed Emily about her experiences doing the ride across California. We started near Yuma, Arizona, near the California-Mexico Arizona border, and rode our bikes all the way across California to the beach in San Diego County. It was and is one of the greatest father-daughter experiences Emily and I have had. And we really did have lifelong memories. And I'll never forget when I asked Emily what she thought, she told me she never realized California was so bumpy, by which she meant all the climbing that we had to do. This really is a phenomenal event. I'm so happy, Greg, that you were able to, sounds like, get as much out of it as Emily and I were able to get out of it, and all of the other kids in the 20 plus years that the Ride Across California has been going on. There are links in the show notes to the Ride Across California, as well as to Fredcast episodes 41 and 68. As Greg said, if you're in Southern California and you've got a fifth grader or somebody coming up to fifth grade, go do the Ride Across California. If you have the opportunity to do so, you will create lifelong memories. It is something you will not forget. Greg, thank you so much for your voicemail and for sharing your experiences on the Ride Across California. Nearly 3 years ago now, Apple introduced the iPad. And I remember when the iPad was first introduced, several people having conversations with me about how the iPad was going to revolutionize media. Not just print media, but video and magazines and reading. And among these voices, my friend Rex, who you've heard here on the Fredcast before, my friend Carlton Reed, and several others. And for the past few months, I've been using an app on my iPad, which for me has revolutionized the way that I consume printed cycling media and other printed media as well. The app is called Reader, R-E-A-D-R. Reader comes from a company called Pixel Mags, and Pixel Mags, in their description on iTunes, describes Reader as follows. Reader gives you the choice to purchase and read hundreds of magazines where and when you want to, whether it's buying a single copy or by using the all-new Anytime service, where, with a flick of a switch, you get 20 minutes of free reading time each and every month to explore publications from all over the world. Best of all, every Reader user gets to sample unlimited Anytime free for 7 days. Reader gives you instant access to hundreds of magazines, and Anytime is the smart new way to read your favorite magazines. Now, it all sounds great, and I signed up for it. And by the way, I did not get this for free. I am a paid subscriber. So I signed up for it, and partly because, and there's other apps that are similar to this on the iPad, but the reason I signed up for it was because of the number of cycling magazines that are included in Reader. For instance, Velo, formerly Velo News, Paved Magazine, Road Bike Action Magazine, Mountain Bike Action Magazine, Mountain Flyer Magazine, Momentum Magazine, Cycle Sport, Cyclist, Dirt Rag, Bike, Bicycle Times, and others. And so initially when I looked at the app, I thought, big deal. I can subscribe to many of the magazines I just mentioned simply by using Apple's newsstand, and they'll come automatically into my newsstand as soon as there are new issues of each available. But when I did the math, when I went to the individual websites and in some cases to Amazon and to some other discounted locations, and I looked at the least expensive subscription price for each of these magazines, Reader was a better deal, because Reader has this Anytime feature, which, again, as they said in their description, they'll give you for free 20 minutes of free reading, a free Anytime reading every month. But come on, how many magazines can you read in 20 minutes? As opposed to, I'm now paying $9.99 a month, and I'm getting unlimited reading throughout the month of every one of those magazines I mentioned and more. I mean, I've got plenty of other magazines. I like to sail. I've got sailing magazines in here. I like to travel. Well, I travel a lot for business, so I've got travel magazines in here. I've got computer magazines. I've got gadget magazines. I've got one, the Paleo Diet magazine. Every single one of these magazines, I can read current and past issues for that $9.99 a month. Now, there are some exceptions. Some magazines that are in the Reader app are not in the Anytime service, which means that you have to pay for them on a per issue basis. But of all the magazines that I just mentioned to you, the specific names that I mentioned, the only one that isn't in the Anytime service is Cycle Sport magazine. And in their case, once a new issue comes out, for instance, the May issue comes out, I can then read the April issue for free. Now, if I want to pay $6.99, I can get the May issue right now. I choose to wait. And when June comes out, I'll read Cycle Sport for free at that time. There are other magazines that don't use that same model. For instance, I believe Condé Nast Traveler is not in the Anytime service at all. So you have to pay for every single issue, new and old. But for me, there are so many magazines, and specifically cycling magazines, that I can read for free, quote unquote, with that $10 a month that I'm paying, that it makes Reader very much worthwhile. Okay, so those are the positives. $10 a month and virtually unlimited magazine reading. It's almost as if I'm sitting in a Barnes & Noble nonstop and I'm able to just pluck a magazine off the rack, read it, and put it back, or keep it with me. New magazines, old magazines, and so many cycling magazines, which really appeals to me. Now, keep in mind, Reader is far more than just cycling magazines and travel magazines and the things that I've just mentioned. They've got art magazines, automotive, entertainment, home, lifestyle, men's interest, women's interest, news magazines, science and technology, sports, travel, and a lot of other topics that are in the Reader app and available for you to read. And the majority of them, at least I've found, are in this Anytime service. So for 10 bucks a month, it's virtually unlimited reading. Now, what has taken me so long to bring this review to you is while all of that sounds great, I've really got some problems with the app, which I usually am able to overlook because I find it to be such a value. But let me give you a couple of examples. The app is extremely slow to load. And unlike a lot of other iOS apps, which sort of are suspended in memory when you're not using them, and then when you go to open them again, you're right at the same spot you were the last time you used it, Reader does not follow that convention. So it seems like if you wait more than a few minutes after using another app and you try to go back to Reader, it needs to reload and it's very slow to load. Frequently, I have to load the app 2 or 3 times because it is prone to crashing the first time I load it. And sometimes when I'm in the app and I'm searching for new magazines or downloading new issues, inexplicably, the app crashes as well. So it's got some crashing issues, which I'm hoping they're going to be fixing. Now, according to the Reader listing on the iTunes store, they've got reports from people that it's crashing and they're working on it. But that note was posted on January 4th, 2013, more than 3 months ago. So that's an issue. I have issues where when it's downloading new issues of magazines, downloads often stall. It'll say 99% forever. And because the app will only allow you to download 5 magazines at a time, you get enough of those stalls, and pretty soon it's time to kill the app and start all over. Another problem that I have is I would really prefer that the app automatically download new issues of my favorite magazines, because I've taken magazines and I've put them into a section called favorites, and I'd really prefer that it downloaded the newest issues automatically. And then when I went into the app, I could see which ones were new. Instead, the app sends me an email. I don't find that particularly helpful. I've also found that the Reader app is a bit of a battery hog. I noticed that the iPad, I'm using an iPad 3, I find that the battery drains faster using this reading app than, say, the Kindle app or the newsstand app, and that the iPad tends to get warm while I'm reading as well. I'd also like to see a better library system, more attuned to the way that iTunes displays your music, where you can search by artist, and then it will give you a printed listing of each of them. It's very difficult to figure out what are the newer issues, which issues you've already read, which issues you've only read part of. I just find it very, very clunky, and that it doesn't tend to follow standard user interface conventions on an iPad, on an iPhone, or even on a computer. So I'd like to see a better library system to allow me to better organize my magazines and better understand what are the more recent ones, which issues they are, etc. As an example, if I go into a particular publication, for instance, I've just gone into Velo News. And so at the top, it's showing me the latest issue, and it says April 2013. It's giving me a preview of it, and it's also giving me a description. Below that are a number of other issues. What isn't clear by looking at that list of issues is, if this was April, which one was March, and which one was February, and which one was January. And if you tap on one and it comes up, all of a sudden the others are shown a bit out of order. And I just find that that's very, very clunky. Again, I'm able to get over it, but I really keep hoping that there will be new updates of Reader all the time, and I haven't seen one, at least since the beginning of the year. So the bottom line is the app is free. You can try it out. You've got that free 20 minutes of any time, and I'd encourage you to do it. I'd have to give it, if I was choosing between, you know, 1 and 5 stars, 1 being least and 5 being best, I'd probably have to give it 2.5 stars. 2.5 because I find it a good value, and I find a lot of magazines that I'm interested in within the app, but that lacking 2.5 is because of crashing and because of non-standard interface and simply because of the clunkiness of using the app itself. Go ahead and check it out. It's free to try out. You'll find it on the iTunes Store, and of course, there is a link in the show notes. And one more note, and I've been thinking a lot about this. I talk a lot on the show about iOS apps. It's quite simply, I don't have an Android device. If somebody has an older Android device, or at least one that they're not using, that maybe they'd like to loan me or send to me that I could use, that is using a relatively up-to-date version of Android, I would love to give that a try and try out some similar apps to some of the ones I talk about on iOS. Or if you don't want to do that, maybe you've got a newer Android device, why don't you send in a review of your own of some apps that would be of interest to fellow Freds? I would love to feature them here on the Fredcast. Any questions or concerns about Reader, let me know. I'd love to give you further feedback on my use of the app and answer any questions that you might have. Okay, one more thing I want to talk to you about tonight, and this is a question that I get a lot from listeners, and that is, how can I watch a live stream of an international cycling event if it's not being broadcasted or streamed in my home country? So for example, the Tour of Flanders today was not being streamed or broadcast live here in the United States. So what a lot of people do is they will go to steephill.tv. Steve does a great job of providing you with a list of live streams, and they'll click through to try to find one that isn't blocked for people who are not in the country that's doing the broadcasting. So let me break that down and make it more simple. During the Giro d'Italia, the local Italian sports networks provide not only live television coverage of the Giro, but they will also stream it live over the internet. But when you go to try to connect to that live stream, the server checks your IP address, your internet protocol address, which includes your location. And if you are not located in Italy, or if your IP address doesn't indicate that you're located in Italy, you can't watch the live stream. So as you'll see when you look at Steep Hill and other websites that provide this information, there are a number of pirated streams. I know, for instance, Byron from Bike Hugger was blogging earlier today. He was watching one of those streams for the Tour of Flanders, and there were a bunch of dodgy ads that were coming up during that stream. And that's what happens when you watch a lot of these pirated streams. And the way they get pirated is simple. Somebody who is in the country where they can watch the live stream pipes it through to, say, Justin.tv or one of these other live streaming services, allowing you the opportunity to watch it, even if you're not in that country. So hopefully that makes sense. Now, the ethics and legality aside, because being the person streaming that out to the internet, I'm going to guess, just as you always hear, you know, the rebroadcasting of this football game has to be done with the express permission of the National Football League, etc. I'm going to guess that the legality, that the law says that the person who's providing that pirated stream is likely breaking some rule, regulation, or law in their home country. And so whether or not it's ethical for you to then watch that, I'm going to leave that to you. Similarly, since you've asked, many of you, there is another way for you to be able to watch those live streams without getting a pirated stream. And again, the ethics of this and the legalities of it, I'm going to leave to you. I don't know the answer to this question, but I do know that when I have been, for instance, in China, and I wanted to use various social networking services, and in some cases, even Skype, the only way that I could do it was by using a virtual private network. Now, you've probably heard of VPNs before. A VPN is essentially a secure tunnel between your computer, in this case, my laptop, and a remote computer located someplace else. It's a tunnel that allows all of the traffic to be encrypted and hidden from the local routers and computers in the home country that you're in. So for instance, when I was in China and I wanted to use Twitter, I used a VPN located in the United States. All China saw was packets going back and forth, but I was able to use Twitter as if I was physically located in the United States. Now, another benefit of using a VPN, you've all heard that you really shouldn't sit in your local coffee shop or a hotel when you're traveling and use their open Wi-Fi network, because everything that you transmit is essentially in the clear. So people can sniff your packets, see your personally identifiable information, including in some cases, credit card numbers, passwords, usernames, etc. So a VPN is a great way to create a secure tunnel. And that's another reason why I always have a VPN on my computer, because I travel a lot and I need to use open Wi-Fi networks. And this way I can surf securely and know that my packets aren't being sniffed. Well, another benefit of some VPN services, the one that I use, for instance, Whytopia, and I'm a paying customer, so they didn't pay me to use their name, allows me to sort of geographically shift my location. So let's say, for instance, I traveled to the UK and I wanted to watch Hulu. Well, Hulu's blocked in the UK. Okay, so I open up my VPN and I connect to an IP address located someplace in the United States, and I'm allowed to use Hulu or Netflix or any other service that may be blocked outside the United States. Well, similarly, getting back to watching cycling, you could do the same thing. Again, you have to check into your own ethics on this and the legalities of it, but you could do the same thing to geographically shift your location to allow you to watch, for instance, the UK feed of Eurosport, maybe the Rai Italia feed of the Giro d'Italia, perhaps the feeds from France live of the Tour de France. So the bottom line is, it is a method of being able to view the live streams, even though you're not located in the particular country where the live streams are originating. So hopefully that made sense to you. If not, let me know and I'll be sure to clarify. Again, you need to check into the legalities of this and you need to check your own morals and ethics as to whether or not you're comfortable with doing this. But it answers a lot of questions that I've been getting from listeners. So go ahead and check it out using a virtual private network. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. But before we go, I do want to remind you of our show sponsor, Jensen USA. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast to see this month's Fred's picks from Jensen's amazing selection of products, where you'll also get some incredible prices and some of the best customer service around. And make sure you check out Jensen USA over the next couple of days and weeks as they launch a huge bicycle sale. And if you're in the market for a new bike, you're definitely going to want to check it out. That's JensenUSA.com/TheFredcast. And as always, we thank them for their support of The Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. And before we get into tonight's pod safe cycling music, just want to let you know how you can keep in touch with us here at The Fredcast. Of course, you can check our website at www.thefredcast.com. You can like us on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter. The Twitter handle is simply Fredcast. Of course, you can send us an email at any time. Our email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. You can also use our listener hotline, which is area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Or you can use that cool SpeakPipe widget, which you can find on the right-hand side of the page. It's how listener Greg was able to send us a voicemail earlier, and I was able to get it right up on the show. Plus, I also wanted to mention our good friend Hugh Lambert, who sent a really, really nice voicemail. It wasn't something we needed to play on the show, but Hugh, I got your voicemail, and thank you very much. It meant a lot to me. I really appreciate it. So go ahead and send us a voicemail at any time using the Fredcast listener hotline or using the SpeakPipe tool right there on the homepage at www.thefredcast.com. And that having been said, there's just one more thing to do tonight, and that is to bring you tonight's PodSafe Cycling Music. And this week's PodSafe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by IndoorCyclingMusic.com. IndoorCyclingMusic.com is the home of the free weekly featured track and premium members content, including weekly 30 and 60-minute cardio mixes and monthly 90-minute cardio mixes to get the world moving. Go ahead and check them out at www.IndoorCyclingMusic.com. Tonight's artist is Hiding in Public, and the track is called Going Places. And that's exactly what we're all doing now that spring has sprung here in the Northern Hemisphere. I want to thank you so much for listening and staying subscribed to The Fredcast. Thank you for telling your friends about The Fredcast Cycling Podcast. And thank you for patronizing The Fredcast's sponsors. I really do appreciate it. We'll be back in another couple of weeks with another episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. But between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride. I don't know what I want to be. Maybe the man in the monkey suit. A swarm of wannabes ready to bend on his every move. Every time I start to hear, I realize the lies are real. I'm going places you can't climb, leaving what I left behind. I'm going places. Without any traces, I'm going places.
I'm going places. Jason.